This is an ABC podcast. This is the WA Country Hour with Belinda Varischetti on ABC Radio WA.
And a very good afternoon to you. Today, the consumer watchdog is accusing some of Australia's largest fresh food wholesalers of cartel-like behaviour, allegedly price-fixing the supply of fresh vegetables to Aldi stores in New South Wales, Victoria and Queensland. So we'll take a look at that situation interstate and also see whether there are any concerns of that happening here in Western Australia. Also today, the government's agriculture forecaster, ABARES, is tipping Australian grain farmers could produce the nation's third largest crop this year. We'll get those latest figures for you after the news headlines at 12:30. 12:06 here on the Country Hour on the ABC right across Western Australia. First today, 6 months after Consolidated Pastoral Company purchased Rawlinna Station, the WA government is yet to sign off on the pastoral lease and finalise the sale. The 1 million hectare station, 400 kilometres east of Kalgoorlie-Boulder, was established on the remote Nullarbor in the 1960s and covers an area roughly the size of Sydney. In early March, CPC, a privately owned company based in the UK, purchased Rawlinna for an undisclosed sum from long-time owner, Adelaide-based Jumbuck Pastoral. The deal included a flock of about 30,000 sheep and was subject to several conditions, including approval by the Foreign Investment Review Board and the WA government, which needs to sign off on the transfer of the pastoral lease. Troy Setter is the CEO and director of CPC. Troy, why the delay in the WA government signing off on this pastoral lease?
The West Australian government has quite an intense process for the approval of the transfer of pastoral leases. So we've needed to submit quite a lengthy application and management plans to the Lands Department, and then they make recommendation to the Minister, and then the Minister takes it forward to Cabinet for approval.
I did ask the state government why there was this delay. This was the response I got from a state government spokesperson. It says, combined, the Rawlinna aggregation covers more than 1 million hectares of land. Government due diligence for significant areas of land that will alter the concentration of control of pastoral lease ownership in WA is done to a rigorous standard, and the matter will be considered and progressed in due course. How much clarity does that provide?
We haven't got a date of when to expect the approval to come through, and there's no standard approval time for pastoral lease transfers and review in Western Australia. So, I suppose to answer your question, a bit more point to it, we don't know.
How common are long delays in approving pastoral leases?
I think it is fairly common. We've spoken to a couple other people who've purchased properties in Western Australia, and it can take many months.
And how does the WA pastoral lease approval process compare to interstate? Because you do have properties across the Northern Territory and into Queensland.
Yeah, it's certainly a very different process in Western Australia. The Northern Territory and Queensland allow the federal government to do all the foreign investor testing, and where Western Australia, I think, do that again. In Queensland and NT, we just need to apply, show the reasons why that we would be a good operator with history of use, and then also future plans. And then the approvals usually take, they're less than a month, but usually we get them in 1 to 2 weeks, and we can get on and close the transaction and then invest in the operations and the people.
So 1 to 2 weeks for a pastoral lease approval, say across the Northern Territory and Queensland, whereas you're sort of 6 months down the track here. What do you make of that difference?
I think it's West Australia certainly have a much more intensive structure in terms of we had to do paddock by paddock forecasting and management plans, and things that are a lot more detailed. But I, to be honest, I'm not sure why the Western Australian process takes a lot longer.
How long did it take for the Foreign Investment Review Board to approve this sale of Rulina?
It took about 60-70 days for the FIRB to do the review and approve.
And Troy, what does a delay like this from the WA government signal to potential agricultural investors in this state?
I think it you can look at it probably through two lenses and say, well, the Western Australian government is very serious about ensuring that that properties are sold to people that are going to look after them and have a proven track record. And then on the other side, you know, you could look at it and say that it's a slow process in Western Australia, and you need to put a lot of time into your investment model and your planning model if you're a buyer of a property, but also if you're a seller. So for vendors that want to move through family succession and buy other properties, they need to factor in a substantial amount of time until they settle on a transaction so they can either complete succession or purchase their next property.
Does it leave the Consolidated Pastoral Company questioning its decision to purchase Rulina?
I wouldn't say we're questioning. We're still committed and really excited by the opportunities with Rulina. But we'd love to be on site and investing in the property. The property's only running probably a third of the number of sheep that it could run. There's been some really big droughts in Western Australia, as you and your listeners would well know, and it was a really good opportunity for us to buy sheep and help that market. And build the flock up so that it can be generating income and paying more tax in WA, and also too, there's quite a bit of infrastructure that we'd like to invest in, and people. We'd like to increase the number of people that work on the property, and we can't do that until we settle the property.
Could you pull out of the deal if you wanted to at this point because that pastoral lease hasn't been signed off?
I'd prefer probably not to get into commercial terms exactly, but it is time limited in the contract in terms of approvals.
Right, so that's a possibility then.
Yeah, for both sides, but yeah.
But at this stage, you're committed?
Yeah, absolutely. No, we're committed, and we're really excited about investing further in Rulina, so we'll sit and wait.
What's happening at the station today?
We would like to get more sheep.
Yeah. Well,
what's happening today? They're into crutching, and won't be far off landmarking. Shearing's in Feb each year, so sort of building towards shearing. But we definitely would like to be bringing more sheep on and investing further. There was a big flood that went through the property a bit over 18 months ago, and there's certainly opportunities to invest and employ locals to help complete some of those repairs and give the staff better accommodation and better infrastructure.
Is that the first thing you would do when you get the keys to the place?
So absolutely want to, and not knocking the vendors of the property at all, but they've been through a sale process, and we want to buy and invest in the property. So quite keen to improve the facilities for the staff and then focus on growing the flock and putting some more infrastructure onto the property so it can be more productive.
I imagine that's frustrating for both parties, as you implied earlier, for CPC and Jumbuck Pastoral, while you're just sitting in this holding pattern.
Yeah, I don't want to talk too much on behalf of the family, but it certainly, the family can't move on with things that they want to do in with their lives whilst the property is unsold the sale hasn't settled.
This is The Country Hour on the ABC, right across Western Australia, 14 past 12. Troy Setter is here today. He's the CEO and director of the Consolidated Pastoral Company, a privately owned company based in the UK. 6 months ago, in March, a deal was done for CPC to purchase Rulina Station on the Nullarbor from Jumbuck Pastoral. 2 months later, the Foreign Investment Review Board approved the sale, but the sale is yet to be finalised because the WA government has not signed off on the pastoral lease. It's a process that takes sort of 1 to 2 weeks in other states and territories, but 6 months down the track, the WA government is still assessing it. Troy, CPC owns 9 properties in Australia, covering more than 3.2 million hectares. You have properties in Queensland, Northern Territory, and one here in WA, that's Carlton Hill Station in the Kimberley. So this would be CPC's first sheep station. Will you stay with sheep at Rawlinna?
Yeah, we are. We've had sheep in Queensland in the past, and that was during some very difficult times at the end of the reserve price scheme and the collapse of demand for wool. We've got about 50,000 goats in Queensland, so we're not afraid of small livestock. But yeah, we're definitely committed to sheep in Western Australia. We see that the industry's been through a really terrible time over the last couple of years with lack and loss of confidence in markets, seasonal problems that have been record droughts, and we see that there's more upside than downside for the future of the sheep industry in Western Australia.
You bought the property with a flock of about 30,000 sheep. What size flock are you looking at for Rawlinna eventually?
Look, under the Western Australian government ratings, which are naturally quite conservative, it's rated to run a bit over 90,000 sheep. We'd like to get back to 60 and then hold at 60 for a couple of years and then see how that looks from a sustainability point of view before we move forward to a larger number.
And how soon would you get to that sort of number once you get the keys to the place?
Pretty quickly, we would hope. We're budgeting on not selling many sheep off the property for the first couple of years and buying sheep in to grow the flock. Certainly the market has gone up for the value of sheep, which is great for sheep producers all over Australia, particularly Western Australian ones that had a really tough time, but we've missed some opportunity on that. But that's the luck of the draw, and we're in a markets that go up and down. So, but look, I would hope in the first, by the end of the second year that we could be pushing closer to 60,000 sheep.
Yeah, it would have been much better to be buying sheep in March or, around that time rather than at this point.
Absolutely. And we're in negotiations just before that. Well, people were shooting sheep in Western Australia and we were really trying to get the transaction done quickly because we certainly could see a home for some of them.
The WA ram selling season is underway too. Right now, how many calls have you had from WA stud breeders keen to show you their finest rams?
Yeah, look, in the last 4 or 5 months, we've lost count of the number of agents and stud breeders that have emailed and phoned me about their great sheep genetics and the opportunities with their sheep, with their rams. And we'll miss this year's sales, unfortunately, but we'll hope to be there next year.
And staying with merinos, or are you interested in, say, a breed like the Dorper, a fast-growing meat-producing sheep?
Look, at this stage, no, we're planning to stick to merinos. We're eyes wide open to some of the challenges that merino production and wool and wool sheep and have had, and then looking at where the price of some of the meat sheep are. Rawlinna, with its lower but consistent rainfall and the infrastructure there, is certainly well set up and developed for wool, and it is a lower cost operation. So we'll certainly give merinos a good go, but at this stage, we're not looking to change it to a meat sheep operation.
And you're optimistic about the future for the wool industry?
Yeah, I am. I think it's not going to be easy, but no, commodity is. I think natural fibres certainly got a place in fashion, as well as everyday clothing, due to the longevity and some of the environmental benefits that we're starting to see come through. So we're quite confident in opportunities with wool looking forward. But again, it won't be easy. But we're certainly committed to growing and investing in the sheep industry in WA.
How many rams do you think would be required to service the station once you get it to the point that you're, looking at into the future?
It'll probably need nearly 1,000 a year, I would say, but it depends on the weather ratio as well and how that looks on the property. But it'd be anywhere from probably 300 to 600, depending on how we structure the flock going forward.
So that would be what you'd be purchasing annually?
Yeah, we don't plan to breed our own rams. So in our beef business, we breed all our own bulls, but for sheep and for goats, we plan to buy them in.
And from the conversations that you've had, do you get a sense of what a RAM market like that would mean for the WA industry?
I think it'd be a material number. We note that a lot of the RAMs for Rawlinna have come from the east, and that's nothing against those RAMs. And they've come internally through the Jumbuck system. They're beautiful sheep on the property, and plenty of size as well as style, and good micron for the type of production system. But been really impressed with some of the information that people have sent us on their RAMs. So hopefully we can be a bit more part of the Western Australian industry going forward.
I'm sure they'll love hearing that from you this afternoon.
Yeah.
Is CBC interested in expanding the sheep side of the business, like investing in more properties here in WA or elsewhere, or maybe converting the Isis Downs station in Queensland back to its origins, back to a sheep station?
Look, I would never say never on anything. At this stage, we'd like to get Rawlinna into our portfolio and work with the existing team there to get it bedded down, and then we'll you know, sit and keep assessing opportunities as they arise and as you know, markets move, and keep an eye on our overall portfolio and balance.
Are you looking at any further investment in WA at this point?
We've looked at a couple of properties recently, but we're, you know, I can openly say it, and there's nothing against those properties. We're not looking to do any transactions in WA at the moment until we get Rawlinna settled and bedded down.
And you're in Kununurra today, or are you out at the station at Carlton Hill? How's it looking?
Good. I'm at Carlton Hill today, actually standing in the cattle yards looking. We've got a line of about 3,000 steers and bulls and a few cows that are heading to our two feedlots in Indonesia. So you're just in Kununurra today, and we've got a ship in a couple of days, and the cattle look magnificent. The season looks good. There's a little bit of smoke around as the fire season is starting to get going.
Troy, really great to have you on the Country Hour. Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Troy Setter, he's the CEO and Director of Consolidated Pastoral Company, clearly keen for the WA government to sign off on that pastoral lease and finalise the sale of Rawlinna Station from Jumbuck Pastoral to CPC. 22 past 12. Well, if you're in the sheep industry, your ears probably pricked up at a new market for WA sheep with CPC at Rawlinna, and demand for 300 to 600 rams each year. It's a significant change because Jumbuck bred their own rams at a New South Wales property which supplied all their sheep operations. Grantley Mullen is the president of the Stud Merino Breeders Association of WA. He says Rawlinna in the hands of CPC buying rams would be really valuable, but it's disappointing they can't participate in this season's upcoming ram sales.
Once we heard that it might be sold and the sale might be going through and that they were positive about keeping a merino flock intact, there's certainly opportunities for one or two or three studs to supply them with rams from the west, which would be good news for stud merino breeders, some studs in Western Australia, of course.
Well, on that opportunity, we've just heard Troy Setter from CPC say they'd be looking for 300 to 600 rams a year. So what sort of opportunity does that represent? What's the value there?
Well, it's a huge value, obviously, depending on what they are willing to pay for those rams. Pastoral rams, from talking to mates in the mid-north that supply a lot of stations, they range from $800 to $1,500 for grade rams. So, yeah, the figures on them would be pretty good. Obviously, having the studs to have the capacity to supply those rams of the similar type, I imagine they'd want, you know, if they chose three studs, they'd have to be of similar type. I don't think they'd be able to get all those rams from one operation at the moment, but it's certainly a great opportunity for those studs that were selected, I suppose.
And when we think about the history of ram selling in WA, the station market used to be an area that some studs supplied to, but I imagine not many people can say that they've sold a ram to go to a sheep station recently.
No, it has quietened off. Obviously, to the north, the dogs got in, and a lot of those properties, when the wool price come down, went to cattle and or to goats. It just opens up your scope as a stud. If you know that you've got a few station orders, you can really ramp up your genetic improvement by doing larger programs, knowing that you've got a good base covered. A lot of good rams through the downturn the last few years have gone to abattoirs, and, yeah, those rams are certainly some fantastic rams, but because lack of demand through Western Australia agricultural regions, there's been a lot of good rams been available that haven't been sold to, that would have been used to being sold to good station owners and good quality rams too. So
when you are someone that potentially was considering the future, or even if you were someone that would have had to make that really tough decision to send a ram to an abattoir or send rams to the abattoir, it would be really welcome news, I imagine, to hear that there is a potential new player.
Oh, absolutely. And not just, as I said, not just probably one stud breeder, but it'll benefit two or three studs, I imagine, that kind of quantity. From my understanding, Royal Inner and those stations out there have done a wonderful job with their fencing, and the dogs are under control. Actually travelled recently through Queensland for some pastoral properties over there, and they've done the same with the dogs over there, putting in barrier fencing, and the Merino numbers have jumped back up again in the middle of Queensland for that very reason. So the McLaughlins did a wonderful job for running those Merino operations out there, and they built a whole business plan around their Merino operations right around Australia. It has changed hands now with the succession that the boys have gone to the cattle. Hugh and the girls have taken over the sheep operations, but they built a large operation on pastoral country right over Australia, and the Merino flock was a large proportion of that.
We are just about to kick off ram selling season, but CPC say they won't be buying this year because they still haven't got the keys for Royal Inner. The property hasn't been signed off by the WA government for it to transfer. Yep. Is that frustrating when you hear those numbers and you know that selling season's about to begin and there is this company that would like to be buying, but they're not?
Yeah, well, obviously I'll be a little bit careful because I don't know the finer details of why it hasn't been put through, but certainly if they are going to stick with a large Merino flock and they just wanted to be signed off on for them to start buying rams, it is frustrating because it has been a hard time for all Merino producers, and stud breeders are included in that, and any welcome competition on ram sales, and probably not so pricing, but certainly the quantity of rams sold would be welcome news.
And we're speaking to you today with your Stud Merino Breeders Association hat on. But when you think about this opportunity, obviously there's one for rams with the numbers that CPC would be looking to get. But when you think about the sheep industry more broadly, is Royal Inner another potential market option for some other lines of sheep? I'm thinking of perhaps wethers that don't make the weights for processors and Live X isn't there. Is this another market option?
Oh, I would be if they wanted to buy and store lambs and have less risk. Obviously, if they have all mated ewes, they're locked into them, so they could play the seasons a bit if they had some early rain, which they can get through there. They could buy in some stores and then on-sell them again. But the fact that if they're sticking with a Merino operation, I mean, there's famous shearing teams going out there for years at Royal Inner. A lot of shearers that have shorn at home often comment that they've shorn at Royal Inner, and they're quite proud of the fact they've been out there. So the employment opportunity, if they stay with those numbers of Merinos, for the shearing industry, the crutches, the landmarking crews out there, provides plenty of jobs for the area. And obviously the stock agents that deal with them, it's a great business for them as well, especially that amount of numbers. So it has a flow-on effect right the way through. I'm pretty sure all their wool comes back this way to Fremantle. So the Royal Inner wool clip over the years is pretty well renowned. So yeah, it'd be fantastic news if they were going to keep it going and ramp up the numbers to a pure Merino flock. It'd be welcome news in our industry at the moment. Amongst all the other new good news with the prices rebounding, and I think wool is going to have a cliff face take off at some stage once the supply and demand works itself out.
Stud Merino Breeders Association of WA President Grant Lee Mullen speaking to Joe Prendergast. And this on the text from Steve-O from Busso, who says the easiest way for Consolidated Pastoral Company to get approval from the WA government for the purchase of Royal Inner Station and sign off on that pastoral lease would be to build a racetrack on the land. Probably get the tick within a week, as long as CPC let the government spend our dollars and build it. Speaking of sheep too, we'll head to Mushay just before the news that one, there was a similar sized yarding to last week. There were no records broken today, the top price being $320 a head. Some lines rose in price, others dropped. Terry Birkin is going to go through those details for you just before the news at one. Right on 12:30 here on the Country Hour, and Tony Carr in the studio with the news headlines. Hello.
Good afternoon, Belinda. The WA Supreme Court has heard a man stabbed a woman to death and put her body in the sea at South Fremantle to be eaten by sharks. Mohammed Mirza is on trial accused of murdering Helen Masuk in 2022. The court's heard Mr. Mirza had invited Miss Masuk to his Gosnells home because she would have sex with him in exchange for drugs. The court was told after the stabbing, Mr. Mirza drove Miss Masuk's body to South Fremantle and put it in the water. The local government minister has appointed three commissioners to manage the town of Port Hedland. The announcement comes a week after the resignation of the Pilbara town's mayor left the council without a quorum. Former members of parliament Jessica Shaw and Martin Aldridge will manage the town's affairs alongside former Kalgoorlie mayor Ron Jurevich. And the WA government says cameras that utilise artificial intelligence technology have identified more than 275,000 offences since being installed in February. The six cameras can see into the cabin of a vehicle and spot motorists using mobile phones while driving, people not wearing seatbelts and speeding. Belinda, more news at 1 o'clock.
Thank you so much for the update. Appreciate that, Tony. 29-1.
You're with Belinda Varaschetti on the Country Hour on ABC Local Radio, WA.
And Jim has just sent this text through saying WA not signing off regarding the Rawlinna station purchase is more than frustrating. It's embarrassing. Be part of the conversation on the text 0448 922604. Between now and the news at 1, the consumer watchdog accusing some of Australia's largest fresh food wholesalers of cartel-like behaviour. This is happening in the eastern states, but we'll also find out whether there are similar concerns here in Western Australia. And we'll also be taking a look at ABARES's latest crop report. And it looks like Australian grain farmers could produce the nation's third largest crop this year. We'll get to that shortly. First, making our way to the Bureau of Meteorology and Luke Huntington with you this afternoon. Luke, how are conditions across the Southwest Land Division?
Hi, Belinda. Yeah, we're looking at a quiet spring day across the Southwest Land Division today in terms of rainfall at least. So we did have a weak cold front move through earlier this morning and it's pretty much gone now. Just in the onshore flow left behind it along the south coast, mainly between Albany and Esperance, there might be still a light shower still around, but most of that should be gone by sort of mid to late afternoon. And there's just some lingering cloud over just the inland southern parts as well, but no significant weather associated with that. And then heading into tomorrow, we do see a trough forming near the west coast. It's pretty weak at this stage. Overnight tonight, in terms of frost, it's probably less likely tonight. It would be sort of in very isolated areas, such as the far northwestern Great Southern area. So around the Wandering area, temperatures are still predicted to get down to probably around 2 degrees. But otherwise, there's no other frost forecasts throughout the Southwest Land Division overnight tonight. Many of the places getting down to around 3 to 5 degrees. So we've got 3 there at Northern area, 5 at Southern Cross, 5 at Lake Grace, 3 at Kurrajin. So, yeah, very, very isolated frost, mainly just confined to that northwest Great Southern area tonight. As we head into the remainder of Wednesday, there's not too much to talk about in terms of rainfall about the Southwest Land Division. There is a cloud band extending down into the Gascoyne. It may clip just the very far northeastern wheat belt area tomorrow, but it doesn't look like it's going to produce much in that area, 0 to 1 millimetres. And we're talking about sort of the places in north of Southern Cross there in the very far northeast, so it's in sort of in the isolated areas of the wheat belt. And then into Thursday, we are expecting that cloud band maybe just to get into the Esperance area. A little bit uncertain how much rainfall will go into that area around Esperance at this stage. In terms of rainfall, we're saying around 1 to 5 millimetres. It's probably going to be just east of Esperance itself, and then east of Seven Gums. And but Esperance and Seven Gums itself may pick up just a light shower, but pretty light, a millimetre or so. In terms of overnight temperatures on Thursday, it really does warm up. So many places going for between 6 and 8 degrees. So we're not expecting any frost on Thursday morning, and Friday morning we're not expecting any frost as well, with temperatures a little bit lower, around about 4 to 6 degrees, but nothing getting down to that sort of that 2 or 0 mark. And then the Friday itself, we do have a strong cold front still forecast to come through, probably about the southwest capes from the early morning, and then it'll work its way through the southwest land division during the day, probably reaching Esperance in the late evening. But it does look like it'll go through the entire southwest land division during the day. And some decent rainfall forecast with this front as well. There's sort of a tropical link associated with it, so quite high moisture levels. So anywhere between Kalbarri across to Moora, down into Northam, and what else have we got here? Busselton, Bunbury, area, Collie may get up to 20 to 30 millimetres, and we could see some places get isolated falls up to 50, particularly about higher places such as the Darling Scarp there. And then as we head further inland into the Wheat Belt area and the Great Southern, probably looking at 10 to 15 millimetres, such as places such as Meriden, Corrigan, Derwallinu, and what else we've got? Corrigan. And down into Kojanup and Katanning. So, and then getting further east to that, Southern Cross, we've got 5 to 10 millimetres forecast all the way down through the eastern Great Southern around Lake Grace area, and then down to Bremer Bay. So there is a little bit of rainfall coming through with the front on Friday itself. It'll get to Esperance late, so only looking at 1 to 5 millimetres by the end of Friday for the Esperance itself. And then behind the cold front, there is a low pressure system, which will probably just drag along the south coast in its wake on the Saturday period. So it's looking like pretty windy conditions, especially near that south and west coasts, but that'll keep the rainfall ticking over. And again, the rainfall getting right through the southwest land division. So the highest falls along that west coast between Kalbarri and Bremer Bay, 10 to 20 millimetres is forecast, 5 to 10 for sort of inland for the central west, Mullawalmora area. And Northam may pick up another 5 to 10 millimetres down to Katanning. And then further through the Wheat Belt, Meriden, Southern Cross, Quaritting, that type of area, 1 to 5 millimetres. And similar falls for Lake Grace and Corrigan area. And down into the Esperance region, looking at sort of 1 to 5 millimetres as well. So, it looks like we've got a break at the moment, but it looks like winter is returning.
Yeah, and any of that rain getting further across the state, sort of into those eastern areas or northern parts of the state?
Yeah, it does look like it. So in the meantime, tomorrow, we do have that cloud band that I mentioned going through the Gascoyne and into the Goldfields area. So 1 to 5 millimetres is possible through that Gascoyne. So it's Carnarvon, Mount Magnet, Meekatharra, and through the Northern Goldfields, Leinster, Leonora, that area sort of in the ballpark of 1 to 5 millimetres, and then just some light falls in the cloud band through the remainder of the Goldfields and into the Eucla. As we get into Thursday, that cloud band probably peaks over the Goldfields, Eucla area, into the south interior. So there could be some decent falls around 5 to 15 millimetres widespread through the eastern Goldfields and Eucla, possibly isolated places getting into the 20s, but 1 to 5 millimetres forecast through Leonora and Kalgoorlie. Now, with the front on Friday, it does look like it holds together through the Gascoyne and Goldfields. So not huge falls, as you'd expect it as it goes through those areas, but we do have 1 to 5 millimetres through the southwest Goldfields, so just south of Kalgoorlie to Norseman, and it looks like the southern Gascoyne may pick up 5 to 10 millimetres, so through the Denham area, Shark Bay, Mount Magnet area is on the cards of 5 to 10 millimetres. 1 to 5 millimetres is possible through Coral Bay and Carnarvon and Meekatharra. And then through the Goldfields and Eucla as well, just some lighter falls. And then on Saturday, the rainfall does spread through the Gascoyne area, right throughout the Goldfields and Eucla area, just with some lighter falls up to a couple of millimetres. So, yeah, even the Gascoyne and the eastern parts getting some rainfall from the Friday-Saturday systems.
Great. Thank you so much, Luke. It's 20 to 1. Richard Hudson is here now with a look at the rainfall figures.
Yeah, hardly any in the last 24 hours. In the southwest, a few places recorded 1 to 2 mils. But above that, just Walpole Forestry had 5. And then in the southern coastal region, similar story. A few places had between 1 and 2, but the only one above that was Albany with 5 mils. But the ACCC has just made a significant announcement relating to possibly some dodgy behaviour in the veggie industry. So the consumer watchdog is accusing some of Australia's largest fruit or vegetable wholesalers of cartel-like behaviour. So allegedly price-fixing the supply of fresh vegetables to Aldi stores in New South Wales, Victoria and Queensland. The ACCC has commenced proceedings in the federal court against 4 suppliers. So their names are Perfection Fresh Australia, Hydro Produce Australia, Veli Velicia Produce, and Frangipane and Sons, and also against 3 executives. ACCC Chair Gina Cascotlieb says this sort of anti-competitive behaviour hurts both farmers and consumers.
The ACCC are alleging that the 4 fresh vegetable suppliers engaged in price fixing in the supply of fresh vegetables, including broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cauliflower, cucumber, iceberg lettuce and zucchini, to Aldi stores in Queensland, New South Wales and Victoria between 2018 and 2024.
And why do you say that this is cartel-like behaviour?
It's a really important question. So cartel conduct is the most serious conduct prohibited under the competition law in Australia. And what it refers to is, in essence, when competitors agree to stop competing with each other, whether competition on price or agreeing on terms of bids, when they are apparently competing in a process and commercial rivals when actually have reached agreement on one or more elements of their bids.
So how significant is this alleged price fixing?
So some of the suppliers are major players in the fresh produce industry and include the second largest fresh vegetable supplier in the country.
How could this be affecting prices that consumers have been paying for years?
This, of course, is a critical proposition that will be tested in court along with all others. But if we look generally, and all of our experience tells us, and all the work of the ACCC tells us, that competition drives not only choice, but when suppliers compete with each other, it drives down price because they are competing in order to win the ability to supply. In this case, for example, Aldi had a range of manners in which it acquired fresh vegetables, including at fixed cost for a fixed period on standard terms, which also involved largely predetermined prices. But some were acquired in agile pricing, with suppliers required to submit weekly quotes. So if it is shown and the court finds that the allegations have been proved, then it would mean that it was likely that the sort of downward pressure on price that occurs with competition was not occurring in the way that it ought.
Farmers say that margins with our major supermarkets are very tight, and Aldi prices, as you mentioned, are often lower than some of the other players in the sector. Is this a sign that wholesalers are just trying to either regain some market power or try to stay afloat?
We are absolutely aware and saw in the fairly recent supermarket inquiry significant concerns raised by farmers, including that as a result of pricing practices by major supermarkets, and they actually did say that there was more certainty in the pricing that Aldi provided in most case, in terms of certainty on volume as compared to ensuring that there was competitiveness on price. And that was, in certain cases, meaning that farmers were unable to receive the costs for viable businesses. So we're very conscious of this, Josh. The important point is, and we have made recommendations, which the government is considering, for there to be a better redress to the imbalance of bargaining power, including greater certainty on terms and greater transparency on terms and processes to enable farmers to better participate in these processes. The bottom line, though, is that regardless of pressures being faced, this is anti-competitive conduct. That is, the alleged conduct, if it's proven, is anti-competitive conduct and it is illegal. And ultimately, higher prices than actually are the prices that that parties would submit competitively, i.e. on a cost basis, do have a problem that if the price level for consumers is higher, it causes a reduction in demand. And a reduction in demand does not serve farmers. So there are consequences down the supply chain which are damaging for farmers, but we are very conscious of the problems and imbalance of bargaining power that farmers have faced, and we've made recommendations to assist.
So you mentioned the supermarkets inquiry there that found that Coles and Woolworths operate an oligopolistic market structure with limited incentive to compete on price. And now you're alleging that cartel behaviour is happening amongst the largest fresh food wholesalers in the country. You know, how are consumers and farmers supposed to feel about the state of the food system? Is it a system that's working for consumers and for farmers?
The reason there are a very long set of recommendations in the supermarket inquiry report, broken into recommendations to protect consumers and recommendations to protect farmers, is because we, ACCC, concluded, looking at the all of the evidence and also submissions, including from farming groups and from consumer representatives and surveys with them, and including confidential roundtables with farmers and suppliers, that this needs to be improved. We recognise it needs to be improved.
How significant could the fines and penalties be for both the corporations and the individuals that are alleged to be involved in this?
Until November 2022, the maximum penalty for individual contraventions, that is for each contravention, each agreement, could be $10 million per penalty on the monetary level. There are other levels looking at the size of the benefit, if we could prove the benefit to the companies, or if we can't, the percentage of their turnover. Post November 2022, it increased to $50 million. So the government wanted to increase the penalty as a further deterrence to anti-competitive conduct.
That's ACCC Chair Gina Cass-Gottlieb speaking to Josh Becker, and it is 12 minutes to one.
And Belle, there are so many interesting aspects to this story that could affect all the supermarkets and all the companies and farmers that actually supply fresh produce right around Australia. Who knows how the ACCC found out about this, and who knows exactly who is involved if the allegations prove to be substantiated. We have asked Aldi for its take on the allegations. So far, we're yet to hear back. Understandable, very busy company. Couldn't possibly find someone who can write us a few lines. As I mentioned, one of the four large fresh food wholesalers accused of participating in cartel-like behaviour is Volition Farms, which grows and wholesales veggies. It says the ACCC's allegations are very serious and, to quote, we do not accept them. Volition Farms says it's engaging lawyers. And M. Frangipane and Sons says it takes the present ACCC allegations very seriously as well. And the company stresses it has at all times assisted the ACCC in its investigations of those claims. However, given the matters are now before the courts, it would be improper to comment. Perfection Fresh says the same thing. It won't comment on the allegations while they're before the courts. And Hydro Produce Australia, the fourth company accused of this cartel-like behaviour, hasn't actually got back to us.
Any idea if the ACCC suspects this cartel-like activity could be happening here in Western Australia?
We did ask them that exact question. The response was, yesterday's announcement pertains only to alleged conduct relevant to the supply of produce to Aldi stores in New South Wales, Victoria and Queensland between 2018 and 2024. And then it says, regarding your question about whether similar conduct might have occurred in other states and territories such as Western Australia, please be advised we do not comment on potential or ongoing investigations as per our media code of conduct.
So thanks for that, Richard.
Read into that what you like.
Yeah. Richard Hudson reporting there on the consumer watchdog, the ACCC, accusing some of Australia's largest fresh food wholesalers of cartel-like behaviour, alleging price-fixing the supply of fresh vegetables into Aldi stores in New South Wales, Victoria and Queensland. 10 minutes to 1.
The Country Hour with Belinda Varaschetti on ABC Local Radio WA.
The government's agriculture forecaster, ABARES, is tipping Australian grain farmers could produce the nation's third largest crop this year. In its latest crop report released this morning, ABARES is forecasting the national grain crop to reach 62 million tonnes, which includes a near 34 million tonne wheat crop. ABARES Executive Director Dr. Jared Greenville says it's a 12% increase on the forecast in their June report after favourable weather conditions in all major cropping regions.
Given the changes that we saw over, I guess, since June in some of our areas that were at risk, particularly in South Australia and Victoria, but also some pretty good conditions in WA, that's a 12% bump up in what we were expecting in June.
What are the main reasons that there's been such an increase from June's forecast?
Yeah, so after a very unfavourable start to the winter season in South Australia and Victoria, and particularly in southern New South Wales, we've had some fairly good rainfall, mostly in South Australia and Victoria, and some follow-up rainfall, which has really helped, I guess, that area start to drive on. And we're seeing, you know, some improvements back towards average and a little bit above average in some areas. Conditions in Western Australia and northern New South Wales again and southern Queensland have really been quite good. And so we're looking at some pretty exceptional or excellent conditions as we come into spring in those areas. And so that's lifted our expectations as well.
Yeah, WA produced their third largest grain crop last season. Is it possible they can go close to that this year?
Yeah, we're expecting them to go a little bit better than last year. Overall, an increase in 4%. So we're going up almost a million tonnes in WA in terms of expectations, given what we've seen since really June.
I noticed barley production is forecast to increase 10% on last season. Is that because of what's happening in Victoria and South Australia at the moment?
Yeah, we saw producers really make the decision to shift into barley, given its, I guess, performance in drier conditions and the start of the season. We're seeing less canola being grown as well in response in the same kind of trend. And so that's driving some of the increase in barley that we see across the nation. But also we're seeing some improvements in, you know, planting chickpeas and the like as well.
And looking at the spring forecast, particularly for Victoria and South Australia, what do you anticipating might happen and how's that going to affect crop production?
Yeah, we're expecting, I guess, a fairly favourable or at least an average rainfall outlook across most of those areas and getting more favourable as we get into kind of New South Wales and into northern New South Wales. For South Australia, we're expecting now that the winter crop of about 8 million tonnes up from 5.3 million tonnes will be about the 10-year average. So we're moving from well below average into more average conditions, and that's a vast improvement. For Victoria, we're expecting the crop to actually reach about 9 million tonnes, and that's up 14% from last year. So we're boosting that above average in Victoria.
How crucial will those spring rains be, though?
It'll be very critical, particularly we're starting from a low base of very low soil moisture, and so we've had some rain which has helped the crop come along, but they are dependent on that ongoing rainfall. We've got areas which are quite dry, and people will know that, you know, the current pasture growth is quite limited in a number of areas, which is kind of reflecting how that soil moisture is looking out. So we've had, you know, some rainfall, and in some areas it's been more of a drip feed and rainfall, so nothing to really put moisture in the bank. So realisation of this seasonal outlook is going to be really important to what we see at the end of the day.
And in New South Wales, have the extraordinary floods that they've had up north had any impact on your predictions at all?
No, not for overall in terms of the production. There's obviously localised losses and the like. That rainfall and associated with that for the broader regions actually driving some improvements in conditions and for some growers. So it's one of those things where we know that there are losses and some people will face losses, but then there's also areas which will have done better out of the high rainfall.
And you'd have to think it would be good for moisture for the following summer cropping and the subsequent winter crop.
That's right. So the summer crop outlook remains positive, particularly for New South Wales. But it is, we're expecting, it's hard at this stage to get a good feel, but we're still expecting it to fall off a little bit compared to what it was last year, which was really quite exceptional. But if the seasonal outlook does come through and we see that rainfall and also into Queensland, it should set up a good start to the summer cropping season.
ABARES Executive Director Dr. Jared Greenville speaking to reporter Emma Field, and the latest crop report from ABARES forecasting the national grain crop to reach 62 million tonnes this year. 4 minutes to one. All new figures show Australia's gold miners produced 300 tonnes of the precious metal last financial year, worth more than $50 billion at the current prices. Dr. Sandra Close is a director with Melbourne-based gold consultancy Surbiton Associates. She says it was the best year for Australian gold production since 2022-23.
Well, the 300 tonnes, we've reached back up to that again, but the actual all-time record was 328 tonnes, and that was set in 1999-2000. We were around the 300 tonnes mark annually in the late 90s, and then it drifted downwards, but it's now back up. But what's really happening, and one of the drivers at the moment is, because the gold price is so high, most of the operations are treating a certain amount of stockpiled low-grade ore, and about 15% of the feed through the mills at the moment, and this was the last quarter as well, is indeed low-grade stockpiled ore. So they're still doing very well, and the majority of the operations are pretty profitable at the moment, but they're able to use up some of the material that was once not ore, but now is designated ore and is worth treating.
Dr. Sandra Close from Surbiton Associates speaking to Jared Lucas. 3 minutes to one. Let's get to Mouche now. 9,230 sheep sold at Mouche this morning. That's almost 4,000 of those were lambs. Terry Birkin, can you go through the market details?
Hi, Belinda. A similar sale to last week with around 1,000 new season lambs yarded, along with just over 4,000 old season lambs. With most regular buyers present, the sale started off a little slow, but gained traction as the sale continued. Most new season and old season lamb categories remained firm, with the exception of heavyweights easing around $10 a head, while the mutton market was firm to slightly dearer. New season store lambs ranged from $120 to $166, while air freight weights sold from $160 to $190 to remain equal. Trade weight lambs were also firm, selling from $200 to $220, while heavy lambs eased $10, selling from $230 to $280 a head. Old season store lambs started from $62 up to $178 for bigger frames, remaining firm, while light lambs were selling from $150 to $208 a head to recover the slight drop in values from last week. Trade lambs were equal, selling from $170 to $240, while heavy lambs eased $10 to $12, returning $220 to $320 a head. Hoggets were firm, with Merino weather hoggets selling from $130 to $216, while Merino ewe hoggets with condition were making $129 to $190 a head. Plain crossbred hoggets ranged from $95 to $140, while heavyweights returned $150 to $235, and younger rams sold to a top of $275 a head. Bone and mutton were making $63 to $160, while medium ewes returned $150 to $200, and heavy ewes sold to a top of $229. Heavy weathers regained their loss from last week, selling from $172 to $250, while mature rams ranged from $60 to $170 a head. This is Terry Birkin for MLA's National Livestock Reporting Service.
Thank you, Terry. The 1 o'clock news is next.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.